Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I am really excited to have a comment. Now, it's not necessarily on the new programs, but it's one related to our programs on Lawrence of Arabia. It says, "Hello, JBL. I have very much enjoyed your series on Lawrence of Arabia. I thought I would pass along to you as an historical note a photo of my dad's gunboat from World War I, including a copy of his RE Inland Water Transport Certificate of Proficiency." It's really a very nice comment. It says, "It was the first motorized vessel on the Dead Sea, equipped with a Hotchkiss 6-pounder in the bow and a Vickers heavy machine gun in the stern, and powered by a Fairbanks Morse engine running on paraffin." So he's giving me a lot of details on this watercraft. He says, "They had to be careful in loading it, as achieving of transporting Lawrence up and down the Dead Sea in the gunboat on his expeditions to carry out the sabotage of the enemy rail lines. In hindsight, I wish I had time to ask him more questions regarding Lawrence, but I was quite young at the time, and in fact, my dad died when I was 17. All I really remember now is that he said Lawrence was a small man, and he more or less kept to himself. I'm looking forward to meeting all these folks in the resurrection." And of course, he has some Bible background, obviously. And he says, "I'm looking forward to listening to the series on Charles Krauthammer. Appreciate your hard work." So I thought that was just a great comment. And there's someone who grew up hearing about T.E. Lawrence, which was, I think, is just really, really kind of fun. So thanks for that comment. Well, today begins the taping of our first program in the year 2020. JBL is now only 6 programs away from its 200th show. So that's an amazing accomplishment. Now, this new year is sure to be an interesting one. I think that I can safely predict that politics will be the focus of our nightly news, since 2020 is the election year. I don't want to be Denny Downer, but I do think that no matter what the outcome of the election may be, America is likely to even be more divided than we are today. So it's really kind of tragic. It was really kind of interesting. During the December 2019 holiday season, I was able to catch the last few minutes of a Fox TV special on Charles Krauthammer. Now, the special featured his son, Daniel, talking about his father's genius at writing essays. And I really felt really quite, I wanted to pat myself on the back, because what Daniel said, I said. You know, that he was a genius in the way he would write essays. So I was really happy to see that. And certainly Fox News does miss Charles Krauthammer very much. They all said it on the show. And I also think that the whole world is somewhat suffering now without his wit. And if you can get a video of that program, I highly recommend it. I think it'd be really good for you. Well, today, as I was saying, we're going to begin a new program. And we're going to be talking about a new essay. Today, what I want to do is I want to talk about the essay, "The Bush Derangement Syndrome." Now, this was originally published in December 2003. Now, that's about 16 years ago, maybe 16 years in a few days, I guess. But to me, this essay, I think, is really timely for us to be doing this time, because it was written right around the time of the 2004 election year. And it's just amazing what you can learn from Charles Krauthammer. Anyway, I think this will give us really good perspective on what's coming up this year. To help me do this, I'd like to welcome James Brandon back to the podcast. Welcome back, James.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has been.
But we know you've been busy and I've been busy. So for everybody out there, I just want to remind you that James is a literature instructor at our Imperial Academy High School. And both of us are still enjoying a little bit of a winter break that's going to end, sadly, next week.
Too soon.
So let's start, James. I just wanted to maybe read this first quote and I'll let you take over some. Give the listeners out there a different perspective. But this is page 74 of certainly the hardbound book. And again, it's titled The Bush Derangement Syndrome. And you're going to see it's so related to today. It was just shocking. But this is, I guess you would call this the quip at the part. There's a Diane, I think it's Rehm?
It's Rehm.
It's yeah. Rehm, okay.
I've had the pleasure of hearing her on public radio several times.
Oh, you did? Okay, so I didn't know how to say that. Anyway, but here she's asking a question on her radio show. It says, why do you think he, meaning Bush, is suppressing that September 11th report? So this is Diane Rehm, obviously, NPR. It's got to be liberal left. I mean, we just have to be honest about that. And then she's questioning Howard Dean. And Howard Dean in 2003 was the Democrat front runner to run against President Bush for president. So essentially, it is a little repeat of today. Well, the Democratic Party is still trying to pick a front runner.
Trying to find someone.
Trying to find someone. This is a hot issue, this whole thing with September 11th report, or is the 9/11. I think maybe people might be more familiar with that term. But Howard Dean answers, I don't know. There are many theories about it. The most interesting theory that I've heard so far, which is nothing more than a theory, it can't be proved, is that he was warned ahead of time by the Saudis. Now who knows what the real situation is? So does that sound familiar to you?
The term that kept coming to my mind as I was reading this essay was, or the phrase, I suppose, the magic interpretation of the will. Just this concept that you can kind of just speak something into existence. You know, we don't have any proof. And the way that he kind of put it out there at that time, too, saying, well, we don't really know. We can't really prove it one way or the other. But it is interesting, giving it airtime. And that's so much of what we see today with the news cycle is what gets airtime? What's being talked about?
What amazed me about it is, one, it just kind of gave me chills because it sounds so much like what happens today. They've been doing this to President Trump for 3 years, where they just float these things out in the air. And it's just amazing how many people pick up on it and say, oh, that must have happened. And here Dean is telling us he doesn't have any proof.
Not a shred of proof, but it's an interesting theory.
Interesting, right. That's right. It's an interesting theory. That's the foundation of Charles Krauthammer's essay, The Bush Derangement Syndrome. But we could easily say today, the Trump Derangement Syndrome.
They have. I've been digging around trying to do a little bit of outside research for this. I'd heard the term Trump Derangement Syndrome before, and I don't believe I'd actually read this Krauthammer essay before. I've read quite a few of his, but not this particular one. So when I was looking through the table of contents, I saw Bush Derangement Syndrome, immediately connected it to what I've read in the last couple of years about the Trump Derangement Syndrome. And I thought, oh, well, I bet there's some parallels here, and there's a reason that. So Krauthammer kind of coined this phrase in the 2004 election run-up, and it's been picked up by the conservatives now. He was a conservative too. It's been picked up by the conservatives again to describe the way that people are just sort of possessed with great hatred for anything related to Trump or anything he does or he says. It's just kind of a derangement, as Krauthammer described.
Right. You know, I remember before he was even elected, this came up, that he was crazy, that he was insane, that he should never be elected president. I mean, it started very early 2016, it started. Before he was even inaugurated, it started.
Yeah, when he announced he was going to run.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, he's, what was he known for? He's a celebrity. He's kind of, since, we've had a celebrity who became president once in our past, and he was also a rather divisive president, but arguably quite a good president. But I remember when I heard that he was announcing he was running for president, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But, I think he's proven what he can do.
Let me just read another quote. I think this is another good one. This is the very beginning of the essay for all of you listeners out there. But this is his wit. I just think it's it's a very serious essay, but it's really kind of funny at the same time. He said, it's been 25 years since I discovered a psychiatric syndrome. For the record, secondary mania, Archives of General Psychiatry, November 1978. So we have to remember that he was a practicing psychologist for a while. So the thing that's so good about this essay is there's a lot of medical references. I mean, he keeps tying it back to, you know, epidemiology, and, you know, that they're trying to figure out, you know, what's causing this syndrome, and it's really, really good. But he says, and in the interim, I haven't been looking for a new ones, but it's time to don the white coat again. So he says, okay, I'm putting my white coat on for this essay. And it says, a plague is abroad in the land. And then he goes on to say, Bush derangement syndrome, the acute onset of paranoia in otherwise normal people in reaction to the policies, the presidency, nay, the very existence of George W. Bush. That's too current to, yeah. to not see it.
The connections, I think, are immediately obvious.
Yeah, and Charles Krauthammer's dead. I mean, this book has been out for a while.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, I think it's funny when he goes on to say that the dean, I mean, he was governor of Vermont for 5 times, and he's saying that he was sane the whole time he was governor, and then all of a sudden, you know, now his mental status is in question.
Yeah,
it is funny. I did a little bit of research, and I dug up a little bit more about, you know, Governor Dean. He was the front runner for the Democrat Party, but then he lost Iowa, and so what he did was. In his concession speech that he had, you know, he had lost to, I think it was Edwards was second, and then he was third, so he had to step out. The other two were going to finish the run. But he started saying, yeah, but the Democrat Party, we're still going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. We're going to take this state, that state, that state. And then he screamed. And so...
Kind of a little bit of what he's famous for now. If you Google him online, that's one of the first automatic fill-ins that comes up when you type in Howard Dean.
Yeah, it's the meme.
Howard Dean screaming.
Yeah. And as Charles Krauthammer says, it's what doomed him. It doomed his political career. He actually resigned, I think, after all that. So Krauthammer packs so much into this essay. And you know, he talks about all of a sudden... that now Dean has just gotten this agnosticism. You know, he doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know this. He doesn't know that. And then he said he actually has gotten into the Bush derangement syndrome. And so I think one of the big lessons that we can take away from that, even for the current election that's coming up, is that, you know, if the Democrat, I mean, it just seems like this is history. We're not being critical, but it seems like when the Democrat or the Democrat Party knows they're going to lose an election, they develop this syndrome.
Yeah, it was just interesting to me thinking back. Now, I've only lived through the span of a few different presidents, and, you know, I was alive during H.W. Bush, but Clinton was kind of the first president in my sort of cognizant memory. But looking back over the list of the last several presidents, and you can kind of see this is a pattern. You know, I in my thought exercise only went back kind of as far as Nixon, but you know, look at what. Now I'm not necessarily defending Nixon or some of the tactics that he used, but I mean, and that's not the subject that we're getting into here today. But look at the way that he was sort of portrayed. By the other side, look at the way that he was treated by the other side. George Bush Sr., he seemed to, and maybe you would have a better grasp on that than me, or probably would, but he seemed to be perhaps more respected by both sides of the aisle. And then you get to George Bush Jr., and he was, you know, kind of caricaturized throughout his entire presidency, and and demonized. It was kind of a weird flip-flop between either he was a goofball that you could kind of make a character out of, or he was this demoniacal warmonger that just hated people and wanted to go start wars. They kind of flip-flop between those two things. And then you get to, you know, we have, 8 years of President Obama, and now we have Trump, and it's the same thing again, where you kind of see that pattern, you know, throughout the last several decades where, well, this is, you know, it's a strategy. It is.
It's definitely is a strategy. They would make fun of President, his father, President Bush, George's father.
Senior, yeah.
He was really... I think he was a very well-respected man, but he just didn't have enough oomph.
Right,
I mean,
right.
What I remember of him, he really didn't have this striking personality where you could say, oh, man, I really want him leading this country. But I remember with his son being elected, I mean, it was a really difficult time in the United States anyway. And but he showed the most leadership, and people didn't want a Democrat definitely running the country again. But the thing is, as soon as he became president, I mean, there are certain things that he would do, like the word nuclear.
Right.
He would say
nuclear.
Nuclear. Yeah. I can't even say it right because, I mean, I can't say it wrong because I work for the nuclear industry.
Right. He definitely had some foibles.
Yeah, you know? But it doesn't mean he was stupid.
No.
And, you know, I just saw, again, doing research for this essay, I have to admit, I saw a report on NBC News that this speech pathologist has come out now with a new video about how President Trump is only using phrasing as a child. In other words, he's only using adolescent terms. He can't speak as an adult. This essentially is what they're saying. So they're already starting.
And insinuating. And it ties right into the estrangement syndrome.
Exactly.
Insinuating that perhaps there is some kind of issue there, some
with his brain.
Why his brain is underdeveloped is kind of the insinuation behind that, without saying it, without really offering any proof beyond just the opinion of one person, and just kind of not saying one way or the other, but putting it out there. And that's what Howard Dean was doing in 2003. It was just putting it out there, not saying I support it or I believe it, but it's interesting. I just want to put it out there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that have been doing that.
Yeah. And even during the impeachment hearings, I mean, I did watch more than I normally would. First of all, I've never really been, we've talked about this on former shows, I've never really been interested in politics. In fact, I've hated it because of my father was Republican, my mother was Democrat, and they would get into it all the time. You know, so we, as kids, we hated it. You know,
yeah.
I stayed out of it. I think other siblings were still into it. But the thing is, I paid more attention because of, just because of, you know, what's happening to this country. The country's being torn apart, and it does very much concern me that the country is being torn apart like it is. And so I've watched more, but the Democrat Party is willing to float anything in the impeachment hearings. You know, they couldn't get him from the Mueller report, so then all of a sudden it's now bribery. All of a sudden now it's
The goalposts just keep moving.
It just keeps changing all the time.
This won't stick, so we pick another thing. But look at what the original big, what everyone said was the death blow, was that dossier that came out.
Yeah.
You know, it was not long after the election. It came out. It's full of just salacious rumors. And Mr. Stephen Fleury has played that compilation video on his show before, where it just goes through and everyone just like, well, we can't confirm all of it, but we have pretty good idea that there are definitely parts of that are true. And, you know, again, it's just that kind of putting it out there. Well, we don't really know, but we're putting it out there. Isn't it believable? Can't you see this being true? Couldn't you believe it? And people just having such vitriol for President Trump and what he stood for and just absolutely willing to believe anything, you know.
Yeah. It does seem to me, though, that now even the media involvement is at a new level.
Oh, yeah.
With all of it.
Well, because if you go back to 2003, Howard Dean, this moment that Krauthammer writes about got him, it earned him backlash.
Yeah.
And it earned him backlash from both sides of the political spectrum. and damaged him. Yeah. And now it did also, and Krautheimer talks about that, it did open the floodgates then, though, because the idea had been put out there, and because it had been spoken in a public format like that, it was in people's heads, and they're like, well, maybe Bush knew. Maybe there's a conspiracy theory here.
I do remember all of that. That there was
it's still a popular thing. Yeah. I mean, there's tons of conspiracy theorists out there that want to believe all sorts of crazy things. And one of the big popular ones is that, you know, the United States was behind the attack somehow.
I mean, there was, even at the time, of course, all of us here in Oklahoma City know about the Murrah Building bombing.
Yeah.
And that's 20 years ago.
Yep.
And there was conspiracy theory about that. The government did it.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. The government did it. You know, it's crazy what's going on.
And that's always been there, but giving it a public platform like, well, Howard Dean opened the floodgates on that.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of out there in the collective public conscious, and we're like, oh, yeah, I've heard something about that before. Yeah. Wasn't Howard Dean saying something about that?
Yeah.
And then it just became less and less shocking.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so it's interesting when you said the floodgates open, it is really kind of interesting. That is when it happened. I just wanted to go back to the essay just a little bit. He talks about the spread of the syndrome, and I think this is really funny, but it's not funny. It says, this is page 74 and 75. It said, it is, of course, epidemic in New York's Upper West Side. He's talking about the syndrome. And he said, the tonier parts of Los Angeles, where the very sight of the president, say, smiling while holding a tray of Thanksgiving turkey in a Baghdad mess hall, caused dozens of cases of apoplexy in otherwise healthy adults. But anyway, he goes on to say, what is worrying epidemiologists about the Dean incident, however, is that heretofore no case has been reported in Vermont or any other dairy state. So he's mocking Dean.
A little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, about Vermont and any other dairy state. But the point is, even if you look at today, especially New York City, it's heavily Democrat. Yeah. You got Bill Pelosio, you know, and there you have Nancy Pelosi in the San Francisco area. And those areas are terrible. Yeah. They're being run terrible. You've got homelessness. You've got people hate the police. You know, it's all these liberal Democrat views. And again, we're really not trying to talk about politics, but we're really trying to say with this, all the listeners out there, is that Krauthammer had a vision. He saw things, and he wasn't afraid to talk about it.
He could cut through the fat that so many other people just got hung up on.
Yeah.
And really see to the core of the issue there. And in this case, you know, you're talking about partisan politics, and you're talking about just a whole group of people's inability to sort of approach something rationally and logically because of their just intense dislike for someone.
Yeah.
Which is what we're seeing today and what we've seen for the last 3 years.
Yes. The thing I think I want to just continue this because it's so, this follow up on this, the last quote I just read, because this is the trail, and I want everyone to see the trail. It gets thrown out. It gets thrown out on an NPR program. It gets thrown out on a CNN program or CNBC or whatever it is. And then it catches on. You know, it gets in the local public. Like here he's talking about, you know, New York. But then listen to this. He says, this is on page 75. He says, moreover, Dean is very smart. Until now, Bush derangement syndrome had generally struck people with previously compromised intellectual immune systems.
Very sophisticated way of questioning someone's intelligence.
Yeah, hence its prevalence in Hollywood. So what he's saying there is that, and this is back in 2003, that people in Hollywood, you know, had previously compromised intellectual immune systems. So the people, what he's saying is all these actors are not really that smart. And then he's talking about, hence, its prevalence in Hollywood. Barbara Streisand, for example, wrote her famous September 2002 memo to Dick Gephardt. Now, Dick Gephardt was, he was majority leader in the Congress, in the House, Democrat majority leader. Then he was the minority leader. But she's writing to him about the president. He said, was dragging us toward war to satisfy among the usual corporate malefactors who clearly have much to gain if we go to war against Iraq. He said, the logging industry, timber being a major industry in a country that is two-thirds desert. So isn't that exactly, I mean, to me, what's amazed me the whole time Trump has been president, how many actors are just anti-Trump.
Vocally critical. And they get such a platform, too, because, you know, all the talk shows want to talk about them, the late-night shows, they want to talk about them. It's just, and I mean, again, it's, I don't think it's new. Necessarily, it's not new to this president. I think it's just, you know, you've got a case of in particular Hollywood and LA and some of those pockets of the country that are just so, they live in a bubble and they've got their own little world
and they're rich
and they're rich and and so there's just certain problems, there's just certain things that the rest of America has to deal with and think about that. You know, it's really easy to sort of support certain ideas when the day-to-day struggles of life, you know, you don't have to worry about that stuff.
Right. But you know what's so sad about that is some of them, I mean, they're hero worshipped almost. I mean, they're worshipped because of their roles.
And so they have an impact.
They have a voice. Huge impact.
Yeah. People care what they think about,
yeah.
Which then, in a way, also gets back to media, because why do people care what they think about? Who created the situation where we hang on every opinion from every person that starred in some famous movie or had some famous TV show?
Yeah.
You know, there's a market for it, so it's the chicken and the egg argument, I suppose, yeah. Which came first. But
I think what's really sad is that all these people out there that are so, let's say what it is, the Trump derangement syndrome.
Right. TDS.
Yeah. Poor President Bush. He's out of the situation. We didn't have to worry. He doesn't have to worry.
He's
about
enjoying
it.
Retirement.
Yeah,
now.
He's enjoying
painting,
his retirement.
Painting away.
And to me, what's so sad about it is it's so mean-spirited.
Oh, yeah.
It's kindergarten.
It's
playground bully stuff.
Oh, and so much of politics has become that now.
Yeah.
Which I think is the distasteful thing for me and for many other people, that it's just, is so distasteful.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you would expect out of teenagers.
Yeah.
And so, guess what? That's all the time we have for today's program. So next time, we will continue our discussion of the Bush derangement syndrome, or maybe we should call it the Trump derangement syndrome, TDS. We have now completed a number of essays with our latest series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book of essays titled Things That Matter. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can also find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And I do recommend you get it. It's really worth reading. Now, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. Or you can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.